Hey, Phil, let go of my ego. Put aside the ego and embrace the moment.
Oh, for crying out loud. It's time for another midweek drive transcontinental adventure.
I was talking about waffles.
So, probably one of the two most pernicious words in the language of English happened to be I can't. Something we've said for years. It's that whole notion of actually self-sabotaging beliefs, a whole range of things that we've taken over the months and seasons we've been covering this. Who better than to actually address this one more time than actually an automatically tremendous individual, a confidence expert, 8 times international best-selling author, and indeed chief executive officer of Think Yourself. It's the wonderful Natalie Plamondon-Thomas. How are you, Natalie?
I am great. Great to be on your show, Alex.
Well, I have to say, already you've won the award for most sensational backdrop, Natalie. I'm very impressed with that. It's a wonderful sort of design that you've got in the background there, and really impressed with that. And my tartan rug pales by comparison, but let's carry on regardless. It is radio after all, so good news from that point of view. We've got two wonderful people who are actually joining us. First of all, from Norwich, England, Rebecca Bond, a student in English and Journalism, and also from North Carolina, we've got Jessica Burtis with us. Rebecca, have you had a chance to look at some of the magical things that Natalie has put together in terms of confidence expertry?
I have indeed, and I'm very excited to talk to you about it, Natalie. I think it's a great business you've got going. I think it's really beneficial to other people, and I think that's really important, the things you're helping people with. So yeah, really excited to talk to you today.
And let's actually just review things, Natalie, because I mean, your background is very impressive. As you say, over 10 years of experience in human resources, 25 years of experience in sales, over 30 years in the fitness industry, in 2007, Fitness Instructor of the Year. So clearly, when it comes to motivation, etc., you've proven time and time again that you've got this. I mean, I started off with that statement that I can be really difficult. Is that a fair statement? Do people actually often become their own worst challenges in terms of actually looking to make progress?
Oh, 100%. It's quite shocking, actually. Research shows that 70% of our thoughts are negative. That's an average of 31 negative thoughts per minute. So, and especially now with the pandemic and everything that's happening, it seems that the negative voice in our head is louder than ever, but we don't talk to other people like that. Like, you're not gonna walk around and tell everyone, hey, oh, you look fat in these jeans. Oh, you're starting your own business? It's never gonna work, you're not good enough. But why are we trash talking ourselves all the time? Like, we wouldn't have any friends if we talked to them the same way we talk to ourselves, right? That's crazy, but it is happening, definitely.
An interesting sort of pivot point to actually relate to on that side of things. Okay, Jessica, welcome to the program. I think in terms of time zones, given that Natalie is on the west coast of the North American continent in Vancouver, you're well into the afternoon now. But Jessica, any thoughts or questions at this stage that you'd like to put in?
I'm very curious about how you got into this world of wellness. Was this something that you've been passionate about since you were a child, or is this kind of something that you grew into as you got older?
Let me take you back maybe when I was just starting to start to speak professionally about 12 years ago. So I had just gotten a contract with an organization who wanted me to train their sales force. And the truth is, when I hung up the phone, I felt like a fraud. And I remember sitting in my office, hearing this nasty voice in my head telling me, you're not a real professional speaker. Like, you're definitely going to mess that up. It's never going to work. And that's when I made the connection between my confidence in my own inner language. I realized that I needed to figure out a way to stop that negative self-talk. I'm French and I needed to speak in English. And the voice was telling me, what? You want to be a speaker like in English? You want to write book in English? You don't even speak
c'est
English.
Incroyable. C'est incroyable.
Exactly. Actually, Spanish is my second language. I learned English third. So it's true. My English was really bad, I have to say. I was teaching yoga at the time, and I remember at a relaxation at the end, you know, I was telling my participants to relax their body, relax their face, relax their jaw. And I wanted them to put their tongue on the roof of their mouth. And I said, put your thong behind your tits. Because with the wrong accent, right, it sounded really terrible. And I won't repeat it on radio. But it was true that the voice was kind of right. But I thought, wait a minute, why am I trash talking myself like that? And that's when I realized I need to figure out a way to shut down that negative self-talk in my head, because it's holding me back. So I spent the last decade studying neuroscience, and I created a system to change the voice in my head. And that's the system I shared in my 8 international number one bestselling books. That's the system that's at the base of all my online courses. And today I work with entrepreneurs who want to find that confidence so that they can make money living from their passion.
Inspiring over 100,000 audience members and empowering thousands of clients internationally. I mean, Rebecca, you always strike me as being fairly self-confident, but in terms of your own sort of routine, is this something which you think actually we all need a little bit of assistance when it comes to having that initial confidence to say, I can do this?
Certainly. I think especially in a society nowadays when there's a lot of social media in our lives and you fall into this trap of comparing your life to other people's. And I think that's natural as a human to, you know, do that. So I think it's really important to stress that, you know, you're only responsible for your own success and your own happiness. What advice would you give to people that are, you know, comparing themselves or maybe feeling a bit less confident because of, you know, the things that are out there and people doing bigger and better, to say?
Exactly. We constantly do compare ourselves. And what we need to understand is how the brain works. So let me give you a quick brain 101. It's like you have a personal assistant in your head, and that personal assistant is taking notes, writing down everything that you say or think, and it makes it happen. But the problem is people wake up in the morning, they look at themselves in the mirror and they go, I'm so tired. I'm so stressed out. I think I'm gaining weight. Right. So then that personal assistant writes it down. Got this. Tired, stressed out, gaining weight. Yes, got this. Tired. What can I do for tired? Oh, I know, I'm going to keep her awake all night. She's not going to be able to sleep. She's going to be really tired in the morning. Check. Stressed out. Oh, I know, I'm going to make her delete a very important appointment in her calendar. That's going to be super stressful. Check. Gaining weight. That's an easy one. I can certainly find a chocolate bar, something deep fried for her to eat today. And if all fails, more wine tonight. Check. So your personal assistant is constantly listening to everything that you say or think, and it makes it happen. So we have to be very careful what we tell our personal assistant. Like, entrepreneurs come to me all the time and they say, I don't want to be stressed anymore. I don't want to rush everywhere. I don't want to be impatient with my kids, and I don't want to be broke. The brain hears stress, rush, impatient, and broke. So you have to tell your personal assistant what you want, not what you don't want, because otherwise the personal assistant's not going to know. Like, if you do a kitchen renovation and you ask your personal assistant, you ask your contractor, can you paint my kitchen not blue? Huh? Like you need to say what you want, not what you don't want.
That's so interesting, because we can be our worst enemy then, is what you're saying. So the brain does work in a way that we can be our worst enemy without helping it.
100%. We live at a logical level. The logical level, the logical mind can only handle 5 to 9 things at a time. So it's pretty restricted, but 5 to 9 things, like, we can multitask, and we do all the time. That's why you can probably have a meeting while you're on the phone, grocery shopping, and then keep your kids from falling off the cart and still notice the dude in the seafood department winking at the girl in blue in the bakery, right? Like, you can notice a whole bunch of things at the same time, right? But have you ever noticed if you're driving to a new address and you get close and you start looking at the numbers on the houses, have you ever noticed how you have to lower the volume on the radio? How
yes,
weird
that's
is that?
So interesting.
Right?
Yeah, so, I do that.
You do that all the time.
Yeah,
right?
Of course, sure, I do that all the time.
And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this today are like, oh my gosh, same here. It's because 5 to 9 pieces of information is easy to get overwhelmed. So living at a logical level is like when you're always one step behind because it's too many things. When you're driving, you have the foot on the brake, the foot on the accelerator, the red light ahead, the kid that's about to cross the street. There's the woman that might cut you off on the other side. And then there's the guy next to you in the car next to you winking at you. Gross. So when you add looking at the numbers on the houses, the music becomes the one too many, because 5 to 9 is not that great. And we've shared earlier today that 70% of these thoughts, research shows that they're negative and we're trash talking ourselves. So living at a logical level is not the best idea. So I like to tell you how to work instead with the unconscious mind, like the subconscious. The unconscious mind can handle a lot more information, because when you live at a logical level, it's like you're always behind. And then you're, a lot of entrepreneurs are trying to build their business, and then they get up super early, and then they have their objective, and then they get up from, accept client from 5 a.m. till 10 p.m. And then you have to take your kids to school, and you have to take them to sports and between your meetings, which, and then you have to start a podcast, and you have to do some networking and post on social media, and you are exhausted. You have zero life balance. You still live paycheck to paycheck, and it's like you're getting further and further away from your dream life. It's like you're trying to go to Los Angeles, but you're in an aircraft that's flying to New York City. You're going west, but you're in the aircraft that's going east. It's never going to work. So a lot of people talk to me, and my clients come to me and they say, tell me how to get off that aircraft because I'm going backward. And I say, no, stay on that aircraft. Talk to the pilot. Tell the pilot where you want to go and say, hey, bud, mind turning around? That's where I'm going. Imagine how fast you're going to get there if you talk to the pilot. So that pilot is this unconscious mind. The unconscious mind can handle 2.3 million pieces of information at every second, 5 to 9 for the logical mind, 2.3 million pieces of information every second for the unconscious mind. So that unconscious mind is where the power is. It's your pilot. It's your personal assistant. And that's what you want to use in order to work and in order to operate your life every day and use the power that you have in your brain.
Natalie, I'm going to actually just interject momentarily here, because we're going to use one of our team as a little experiment, really, because we've set our task basically making sure that Jessica Burtis will write her published novel. She will have a published novel when she graduates this year. Jessica, we're putting you on the spot here. So I don't know if you'll actually share with Natalie your dream with respect to this. And let's see if Natalie can give you some tips to actually work you through this process from Vancouver to North Carolina.
Okay, so I really want to be able to finally write a book and be proud of it. But a lot of the time I struggle with, you know, worrying about other people's opinions about the book, which is silly because they're not even reading it at this point. But I get worried about how the book will be received and what that will mean they'll think of me. And it's so precious what I've written because it's so personal to me. So I struggle with like these thoughts of self-doubt that I can't succeed with my book. So I would love some help with that because it's truly a very easy writing.
100%. So what I'll do in a condensed version is I'll walk you through the DNA system. So what happens is that very often people do the first step, which is deciding what they want. You want to write a book, right? So let's say you want to do a kitchen renovation. You would create a folder with all the samples, and then you'll put a sample of this countertop, these cupboards, this hardwood floor, the backsplash, the paint chip. You'll put all that in the folder. And people create lists of everything that they want and their objectives and their goal. But that's just a folder. It's not a kitchen. You can't cook in a folder and you can't entertain people in the folder. It's not a kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. So right now you don't have a book. You just have an idea. You have this goal. You have this objective. And people create vision boards. And you might have heard of that. It's very popular here. But visions board, they're just a vision board. They don't really work because otherwise, and it's important you do that. It's important you do the first step. It is the first step. You need to know what you want and you need to create what your book is going to be about. The problem is people, if vision boards work, everybody would live on a deserted island, sipping martinis, driving Mercedes Benz, you know, like, because people don't go to the next two steps. Sometimes they go straight to step number three. Step number three is implementing everything that you want. So in the kitchen renovation analogy, they put the island over top of the existing island and the cupboards over top of the existing cupboards. And they tried to put everything on top, but it's not going to work. You need step two. You need to gut out the old kitchen, remove the old stuff that needs to get rid of in order to install step three, the new kitchen, and install your new habits. So before you can actually have your book, we need to look at what do we need to get rid of. Are there any limiting beliefs that are keeping you from actually writing the book? So I like to work through the six different layers of the brain. And this is perfect because I've written so many books that I can quickly walk you through, following the research of Robert Diltz. The six layers of the brain, the six layers of a person's self, are the environment, behavior, skills, beliefs and value, identity and purpose. So let's start at the bottom. Environment. What kind of environment do you need to set up in order to be able to write your book? So you look at, okay, so I need a computer. I need to turn off all the different notifications so that I'm quiet. Don't look at my email during that time. I need, so what do you need in your environment, and who do you need to surround yourself with? It's the people around you as well. So who do you need to surround yourself with? Do you want to hang out with author, hang out with people who are also writing a book and have a book writing club? And every day from 3 to 6, you write. And then you is there anything that can help you in the environment? Your behaviors, what are you going to do? So you need a system. So I'm going to write all my ideas first, I'm going to put them in chapters, and then I'm going to have sub ideas, and I'll have 3 ideas per concept, 3 parts to my books, and 17 chapters, an intro and outro. So you need the behavior of actually writing the book. The skills are the things you need to become good at. Become good at writing with less words and making things very sharp, very quick, very crisp, with less stuff and more meat to it, right? Beliefs and value is where the juice is. Most problems are happening, that's what I was hearing earlier, are in beliefs and value. You're afraid of what people will think, of being judged for your book. So the problems are happening at the beliefs and value level. So you need to set up what's important to you and what are the beliefs that need to go. So gutting out the old kitchen. So what are those powerful emotion, anger, fear, hurt, sadness, guilt, probably fear here, right? And then the bad habits. What are the things that might be holding you back, and the limiting beliefs? So limiting belief is maybe I am not an authority on this topic. What an authority, authority is an authority. So once you are writing about it, you become an author. And once you're a published author, you become an authority. So of course, you can't be an authority before being a published author. So you need to actually write it in order to, right? Does that make sense? So I'll give you a quick tip to get rid of this limiting belief. So every time you hear something in your head that will say, people will judge me, or I'm not good enough, I don't think I can do this, or I'm so stressed out, or whatever it is that you hear, here's a two-step technique. First, you repeat it in the past. So you rephrase it with I used to. I used to think that people would not take me seriously. I used to think that I was not good enough to be a published author. I used to. So then your personal assistant hears you. It's got the clipboard ready and it says, oh, yeah, she's talking to me. Because if you say, I am absolutely confident, I love myself, I am so great, your personal assistant is like just like when I work with the Think Yourself Thin program with clients that are highly overweight, I can't make them say, okay, stand tall and say, I am thin. Or people that are highly in deep financial trouble with the Think Yourself Wealthy program. It's not going to work to say, okay, put your hands on your hips and say, I am rich. Because the personal assistant is like, no, we're not. Like, have you seen our bank account? No, we're not rich. So she's not talking to me. I'm not writing this down. This is, we must be watching a vampire movie. Vampires don't exist. So she's not talking to me. So you need your personal assistant to know that you're talking to that personal assistant. So you need to say something like, I used to think that I was not good enough to write a book. So then the personal assistant is going to be like, oh yeah, she's talking to me. Yeah, we definitely we're thinking that. What? Wait a minute. We're talking about this in the past. Why are you talking about this in the past? Are we done with this? So immediately you follow with step number 2, a progressive statement. A progressive statement starts with, I am willing to learn. I am in the process of. I used to think I was not good enough to write a book. I'm willing to learn how to have faith in myself. I'm in the process of writing the darn book. So, hey, get watch me, you know. So you use the two-step technique to split your limiting belief into serving beliefs. Okay, Next layer is the identity, the I am. Every time you say I am, that very often holds some different problems. I am not good enough. And this needs to be fixed again with that same two-step technique, okay? So the I am, you need to say what it is that you are that will serve and reach the last level of a person's self, their purpose. So what is your purpose with that book? Who are you doing this for? Beyond yourself, who else are you serving? So ask yourself for these six layers. People that are successful writing books, who do they surround themselves with? And what's their environment? What do they do? What's their behavior? What are their skills? What are they really good at? Are they really good at finding synonyms or words with three syllables instead of two that look more, are they good at creating less content, less words with these deep dense content? Are they good with story? Because stories are amazing in books. So what are they good at? What are the skills? Ask yourself, what are the beliefs and value? What do they believe? They believe that their book is going to help so many people. Because when we work at the bottom layers, we're not necessarily bringing a lot of impact onto the world, because we're only working on ourselves. We're working on our own beliefs and value of I'm not good enough. And then people that think they're not good enough, they would go and buy an expensive car. That's environment, a car. You can't fix a problem in beliefs and value by applying an environmental solution. You can't fix I am overweight or I will always gain the weight back and a limiting belief by a behavior, which is exercising and nutrition. Exercising and nutrition are only behaviors. If you have a limiting belief that you will always gain the weight back, it's not about exercising and having good nutrition that you will change this limiting belief. You need to change the limiting belief in the belief area of your brain. Then when you get to identity and you love who you are, go and ask yourself, people that are writing books, what do they say when they say I am? They say, I am a published author. I am very knowledgeable in that topic. And I am willing to share that with the world. And then you go to purpose and you said, who else am I serving? Who am I writing this book for? How many young women will read your book and will be inspired? Who are you to actually say, well, I'm afraid of what they will think. So because of that, you're going to deprive the whole world and all these people that are counting on your book and what you have to say. You're going to say, well, just because I'm afraid a little bit, I'm going to deprive the whole world of all this knowledge. So look at your purpose. And when you get to the top of the pyramid and you're like, oh my gosh, it's an emergency. I got to get going and write this book. Look at all these people that are waiting for me. So when you work from the purpose and you love who you are, you know that you are a published author, and then you can be, your beliefs are serving you, you have the skills to write the book, you know what to do in your behaviors, and you surround yourself and put yourself in an environment in order to be able to write this book, everything is aligned. So that's the DNA system, is to go through every single layer. And I hope I didn't take too much time. I just really wanted to walk you through. And how do you feel, Jessica, now?
It's very nice hearing that. I appreciate it. And I think that can be applied to kind of any situation. So I think that listeners can really, you know, use that for their own problems. But I think that that's very true how much power words have on us. And, you know, I think Alex and Rebecca will both agree, since studying communications, it just kind of widens your eyes to, or opens your eyes to how much words really have effect on you, whether you realize it or not, and how many like different things we surround ourselves with. And I think so often with our society, it's like we're kind of bombarded with a ton of messages telling us different things. And so kind of just rewiring our brain in a way to kind of say, like, I can grow past this and not be ashamed that I used to feel this way, I think it's a really great way of approaching it.
just delighted that we seem to have finally managed to sort it out, Jessica's Zoom connection, after a few sort of questionable times. It's all working splendidly. And, of course, the fact that we can say, Jessica, the world needs your book. Genius. Rebecca, you've been listening to this. Any thoughts or questions from Natalie from your own line?
Yeah, such fantastic advice there. I think, as Jessica said, that applies to a range of situations. And I think to the listener, I think everyone should take note, because I do certainly agree that mindset, I mean, not even agree, it's just fact that mindset does play a massive role in how we go about our daily lives. I know for a fact that when I wake up in the morning, if I feel better and more confident and, you know, more awake and ready for the day, I tend to be more productive. Is this a common feeling? Does mindset affect daily, you know, productivity and how happy you are throughout the day?
100%. What we need to know about mindset is all these powerful emotions in the prefrontal cortex of the brain. The brain does not know the difference between anxiety or excitement. All emotions are created equally. So what happens is, let's say that you experience a powerful emotion. And when I say powerful, the top five, the most powerful one, are anger, fear, hurt, sadness, and guilt. And a lot of people, when they hear these, they say, oh my gosh, these are negative emotions. They're not negative. They're just more powerful. They are bringing you a positive learning. They're bringing you a gift. They're like delivery trucks. So very often I tell people, when you experience an emotion, it means that there's a delivery truck in your driveway bringing you a gift, okay? So a gift delivery only lasts between 30 to 90 seconds. And you've seen that in children. They are super happy. And then 90 seconds later, it's temper tantrum. And 90 seconds later, they're happy again. It's because an emotion, the cycle of an emotion is 30 to 90 seconds. You go through your loop, then you exit the loop. The problem is, sometimes the emotion comes in, there's a truck, and the truck doesn't leave right away because we don't open the door for that powerful emotion. We don't open the door for the delivery guy to give us the package. So we're too busy, right? A lot of people are busy nowadays, and they're like, well, I'm at work right now, I don't have time for this. So your coworkers are there, so you smile and, oh, everything is okay, no, I'm fine. And then you get home, and then your daughter is like, are you okay, mommy? Oh yeah, mommy's fine, everything is good, everything is, oh yeah, perfect, awesome. And we smile, and then we pretend nothing is happening, and we swallow it, and we don't open the door. So the truck doesn't leave the driveway, it idles, and we stay into that loop. And we go for another round in that loop and another round in that loop. And then another truck comes in and another truck comes in. And soon the driveway is filled with delivery truck and we're stuck. At the beginning, we still can go around the truck, and then you can't drive around it anymore. So you have to take your bike in order to get out. Eventually you have to walk around, but eventually there's no room at all because there's so many trucks. And some people have been stuck in a rut for years because there's too many of these trucks. So you need to figure out, what am I learning? So this powerful event happened into my life. I woke up this morning and somehow I feel a powerful emotion. So you have two choices. If you say, oh my gosh, this is terrible, I feel bad, I'm very stressed about it, I'm afraid, I don't know how to deal with this, I'm uncomfortable, I have to go online now because I can't do things in person anymore and it's stressful, then your brain will pollute you with 1400 different chemicals to pollute your body, slow you down. Like cortisol is one of those chemicals that your brain will send through your bloodstream. Now, if you decide, oh my gosh, I'm uncomfortable, this thing is happening to me, I don't like this, I'm uncomfortable, wait a minute, that means there's a truck in my driveway. Oh, that means I'm learning something. Okay, this is cool, I'm learning something. So I guess, I should get excited. If you decide that it's excitement, your brain, instead of 1400 negative chemicals, will send you some feel-good chemicals, dopamine, serotonin, endorphin, oxytocin, depending on if there's people around, depending on the situation, if you're moving or not, each of them has a different purpose, but you will receive a feel-good chemical that will send you energy. So next time you wake up on fire and you're like, I feel so amazing and I feel great, keep that powerful emotion and move forward. If it's not the case, tell yourself, oh my gosh, I'm uncomfortable with this. I guess I need to start thinking about what I'm learning. How am I growing from this? Why am I going to get better because of this? What am I going to learn? Oh, I guess I'm going to learn where to click on Zoom in order to do a Zoom interview, because I guess I can't do it in person anymore. I have no idea how to do this, but guess what? I'm an intelligent person. And repeat to yourself, I am resourceful. I have a brain, 2.3 million pieces of information every second. I am the most powerful and complex structure of the universe. I can do this. And I'm very resourceful and I can figure this out. So get excited at the idea that there's a truck in your driveway, and then get the parcel, the package, the gift that you're receiving. What is my positive learning? What am I learning from this? Even when it's a tragic thing that happens into your life, there's always a silver lining. Find that quickly and then exit the loop and get excited so that you can receive feel-good chemicals through your bloodstream. Does that help?
I think that's really reassuring to know as well, because as it's the same as we can be our own worst enemy, we can also be our own best friend. So I think that's really reassuring to know that we have that power to, you know, change our mood and our day as a result.
Yeah,
I'm still absolutely relying on my guardian angel, Natalie. I have to say that, you know, they helped me so through so much, including Zoom interviews. But what the hey? I love the line from the LinkedIn page: "You can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Somehow, Natalie can." And I think that's part and parcel of the whole thing. Just as actually Rebecca actually picks a glass of water and actually has a drink as well. No, it's wonderful. It's just synchronous in all sorts of ways there. Just proving the visualization, the reinforcement of the whole system. Natalie, you're obviously across the social media. What's the best way in which people can get in touch with you if they're listening to this in any part of the globe, basically? Because obviously the podcasts roll out from that point of view. Where would you point them to first?
So I would send them to thinkyourself.com. And if you're interested in the confidence guide, remember that I gave Jessica the tool, the two-step technique. That's one of the key for confidence. If you want the full confidence guide with the 15 keys, go to thinkyourself.com/confidence guide. And then the gift is waiting there for you. So that would be my pleasure to share that to the whole audience today.
Think yourself and then thank yourself, presumably, for the actual thinking to actually thank you later. So gratitude is important as well.
Yes.
A couple of final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting debut Zoomer with us on the program today, Natalie Plamond-Dunn-Thomas?
If I have, I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I love Rebecca and Jessica. It was so interesting to have a trio dynamic. I'm loving this. I will recommend all the interviews that I do to get more people in. You guys were fabulous. So thank you so much.
Well, you know, we select them from a long sort of range of these 7 billion cells on the planet. So we have to sort of work them through, sort of narrow them down, because at the end of the day, at least 6.8 billion of those cells are saying, Rebecca and Jessica, we need you. You know, they need to be there. It's important. They'll be singing that sort of routine, like any Jessica's book. So the next critical question, Natalie, is, will you be kind enough to return? Will you come back in the not too distant future and connect with us again?
100%, anytime. I would love to come back to the show.
Cabbages, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, peas, and broccoli. Well, three of those I'd actually go for. Apparently, they're the top five green vegetables. But can we tell the difference? Because in a shocking survey, we actually find that there are many British folk who actually can't actually identify even the humble garden pea with respect to details. With respect to one in 10 adults actually cannot identify cabbage and asparagus when they're shown pictures of green vegetables and so on. Actually, I think they might have got the P. Anyway, to actually address this and actually talk about the importance of five a day and, of course, the wonderful world of super green, we're delighted to welcome the creator of Britain's first super green effervescent drink. That's the wonderful Dr. Max Gowland. How are you, Max?
I'm great. Thanks, Alex. Hope you are too.
Very good indeed. Now, apart from that shocking news that people can't actually identify a garden P, unbelievable. Were you surprised by these findings? Did you just sort of think, well, fair enough? Or is it just a case of we need to fight for the right of vegetables?
Yeah, there were some things that surprised me. I think the garden pea was the classic. I think one in five or one in six couldn't identify the pea, which really is quite, it's funny, but it's very sad. It's quite serious as well. And I think 10% of people couldn't identify cabbage. That really is quite frightening. There were more esoteric vegetables, things like, you know, pak choy and stuff, which a lot of people couldn't identify. And I think I'd be one of those. But I think the underlying problem is that we're not really in love with our veggies, and we never have been in the UK. I think that's the problem. The trouble is, veggies are so healthy. You know, studies, many studies, hundreds of studies, you know, in the scientific press show very clearly that people who eat plenty of fruit and veg have a much lower incidence of many chronic ailments and disease. Things like obesity, diabetes, blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, etc. So that's absolutely cast iron. And the problem is, if you're not getting your five a day, and I'll tell you the data about that, which is quite staggering, then you're going to be missing out on lots of these health benefits. Being a scientist, I only believe data. So I've gone right back to Public Health England data. And the latest data shows that over three quarters of us, Alex, are not getting the five a day, that the dietitians and public health are saying we should be getting on a daily basis. And that's pretty serious, because the veggies are needed as part of our diet in the famous Eat Well plate. And if you're not getting those veggies, you're going to be missing out on really key vitamins like vitamin A, vitamin C, folic acid or folate, things like magnesium, zinc, copper, selenium, and others, all of which play really important health effect in our metabolic biochemical pathways. And that's why we decided to put together this Super Greens effervescent drink, because, you know, we know what we're doing at Future U Cambridge. We have a whole range of really nicely formulated products. But what we wanted was a product that would actually help these anti-veggie people replete their diet with the right vitamins and minerals. Because if you're missing those, you know, later in life, that can catch up with you. And that is unhealthy, very unhealthy. And you can't...
Quite simply, Future U would become end of you, basically.
You could say that. That's the problem. I mean, you know, I presented the data at a recent GP conference, and the doctors nearly fell off their chairs when I presented the data from the NDNS, the National Diet and Nutrition Survey. This is something that's run by Public Health England on a regular basis, where they send dietitians into people's homes, they get them to weigh their food, data goes back to the lab, they work out what they're eating and what they're missing. And if you look at the RDA, the recommended daily allowance, that's the target we really should be getting every day. We have some huge percentages, from 30 right through to 90% of people who are missing the RDA. Even things like vitamin D, 90% are not getting enough vitamin D, the master vitamin. But even vitamin C, you think humble vitamin C, you think we'd be getting enough? No, it says here 60% are not getting enough. Vitamin E, antioxidant, helps protect cells against oxidative damage, as the scientists call it, 90%. Magnesium, iron, zinc. Many of these are unfortunately not being eaten in enough quantity in the diet. And that's what we're trying to do with the Super Greens, is help people replete those.
Well, it makes perfect sense. I think it was former President George Bush who couldn't stand broccoli. Never understood that, but there we are. I quite like broccoli. I think it's a good and effective piece. But as you said, in terms of actually putting a concentrated version of this together, I mean, the whole notion of effervescent and lines from that has a notion of vivacious. So it's not to be confused with fizzy. It's not carbon dioxide percolated through the whole thing, but it is effervescent. And is this one way in which actually people can actually have a short, immediate treatment to actually get those five a day in a very busy lifestyle, even if we're working from home?
Yeah, it's a beautiful way of getting those micronutrients back into the system, I suppose. You know, we got around 20 ingredients. We've even got extracts of broccoli, extracts of spirulina, chlorella, and a few other greenies. And you know, we've got other materials in there, you know, the vitamins, the minerals. We've also chosen those at just the right level. We've not got silly mega doses. We're not selling single vitamins, which I've never been a fan of. What we're trying to do, we've identified what the data is telling us. You're deficient in X, Y, and Z. Therefore, we've got the X, Y, and Z vitamins. We've put them into the product. We've also added additional master vitamins, things like vitamin D, because I know everyone is deficient, or most people are deficient, especially at this time of the year. And, you know, people are desperate to look after their immune system right now. So we have all the immunity vitamins in here, like vitamin D, vitamin C, selenium, copper. Copper is an immunity vitamin. It's extraordinary. Nobody knows that because nutrition is very, very complicated. So we're trying to do the science on behalf of the consumer, Alex. And I think we've done a great job here.
Personally, I'm a great believer in selenium as well, but let's talk about that at another time entirely. And I know that our soil in Britain is particularly low in levels of selenium, which is another issue entirely. We looked at the most loved vegetables, the most hated green vegetables, lettuce. What's wrong with that? I mean, surely we were used to lettuce. I mean, I couldn't believe that's a number five. Kale, okay. Pak choi, watercress, and Swiss chard. Well, I probably wouldn't be able to identify Swiss chard, I have to say, but that's no reason to hate it. Do you think that we're actually turning the corner in this? Do you think that actually in terms of how we're developing this, Max, that products like your own will actually help develop this? Because most people actually, they don't want to be ill. They don't want to be unfit. They don't want to be unwell. And what are the thoughts? This is an ideal way of actually ensuring that you do get those nutritions. The fuel works.
I totally agree. You know, we've had Public Health England messages, you know, pushed at us for 20, 30 years about fruit and veg. And they are the right messages. The trouble is you can't force people to eat things that they don't particularly like. So the next best thing is to supplement. I'm a great believer in supplementation, not just because I'm, you know, I work with Future Cambridge, but I've been in supplementation many years. In fact, I've been in research and development 40 years. And I have always believed that if you can't get something in your food, then why not supplement? Because if you don't supplement, if you're not getting those key vitamins and minerals, and I'll sort of go on and on about that, then that's unhealthy. And, you know, it might make you a little bit tired. If you're not getting enough calcium and vitamin D, you know, your bone health will suffer. If you're not getting vitamin D and calcium, believe it or not, your muscle health will suffer. The selenium you talked about, that's a very important antioxidant. It actually helps cells. It helps protect cells against this ongoing daily oxidative damage, as the scientists call it. So, you know, I could whittle on for hours about the benefits of every single thing here.
Absolutely. And of course, the crazy thing is that our plants and our energy is actually there. We can actually develop that. The message is quite clearly there. Okay, how can people actually get hold of Super Greens Plus, that Super Green effervescent drink? Because people listening to this now saying, I believe Max, I believe him. We need to actually get into this now.
Yeah, please do believe me. You know, I'm very passionate about health, well-being, longevity. Yeah, you can get this at the Future U Cambridge website. So if you went onto Google and just dialed in Future U Cambridge, that's where all the top scientists are, of course, then you would find the Future U brand. Or you can go directly to the website by dialing in futureuhealth.com. But also, if you just prefer the telephone, we've got an 0800 number and it's manned 7 days a week. It's 0800 808 5740. So that's another way of talking to somebody about the products, about the nutrition. And if anyone wants to talk to me in a bit more detail, then I'm always in the back room as well.
Max, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you. It's something which is very close to our hearts at Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting. We very much developed this whole notion of good health, good nutrition. As I say, if you've got a Ferrari, you wouldn't expect it to run well if you put sugared water in it. So that's the important thing there. Make sure your fuel is right and everything else will work perfectly. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
An interesting what?
Zoomer. It's a new term. I'm using this as it used to be radio interview, used to be radio chat, but I think it's on radio. But let's use the term Zoomer. Has it been okay for you?
Oh, yeah. It's been perfect. Quality's been good. I can see you, which is always nice. So, yeah, it's been perfect.
Oh, there you go. So the next critical question is, can you join us? Will you be able to join us again sometime? Can you come back and talk more about the fascinating world of nutrition and more?
Alex, I'd love to. You know, my passion is over 50s nutrition. Future U Cambridge also have a second brand called Prime 50. It's the only brand specializing on the over 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. We've done loads of research on that, and we have the only targeted supplement range for the over 50s. I would love to talk to you about musculoskeletal health, staying active as we get older, and a lot more. So I'd love to come back, Alex.
Dr. Max Gowland, huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
You too. Thanks very much, Alex.
Well, it's fair to say that if he was singing it today, Elvis Presley's tune Hound Dog might have a completely different meaning when it actually ties in with the joys and wonderments of canine nutrition. And we're delighted to actually welcome two fine folk today to actually share with us how actually maybe some of those preconceptions when it comes to the food that our furry canine friends like to eat maybe way off base, certainly when it comes to omnivores, carnivores and such like. The two folk in particular that will be able to shed light on this are indeed television vet extraordinaire, the extraordinarily talented Mark Abraham. How are you, Mark?
How are you doing? Nice to see you.
Excellent. And we also have veterinary professor of animal welfare. Of course, that's the wonderful Professor Andrew Knight. How are you, Andrew?
Good, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Now, Andrew, if we can come to you first, just to actually share with us, let's put to bed straight away the notion that dogs are not carnivores. They do actually sort of they eat all sorts of things, but except, of course, chocolate, which they can't digest, but that's another issue entirely.
Dogs do indeed eat all sorts of things, and the diet of the modern domesticated dog bears little resemblance to that of the ancestral dog. They're biologically omnivorous. They've evolved with hunter-gatherer human beings to basically eat our scraps from our campfires, so they can eat starch and carbohydrate-rich root vegetables, scraps of meat, all sorts of things. What's important that we give them today in the diets that we provide is diets that are nutritionally complete and balanced for dogs and formulated to a good standard and delicious enough that they'll be happy to eat them.
Now, Mark, turning to, again, the other aspect of veterinary science and so on, and indeed hound in general, were you surprised by this research, which obviously kind of also impacts in terms of how we can reduce the carbon footprints, I know, paw prints, of our of our dogs as well?
Well, Alex, I think you can call it food for thought. I think the research by Hound has shown that over half the British dog owners have never considered the impact their dog has on the environment, which I'm not really surprised at, because when we have pets, there's plenty of other things to distract us from rather than thinking about their impact on the environment. But the good news is 87% have admitted that they're keen to make small changes in order to help reduce that paw print, as we've discussed. And there's six major ways that all pet owners can do this. The products that we buy, so consider higher quality, longer lasting products rather than more disposable ones. Consider the packaging they come in, obviously go local if possible to reduce transport costs and impact on the environment. Consider upcycling, repairing, washing toys and treats, toys and sort of bedding. Grooming products are becoming more and more plant-based and ethical. The waste, how sick are we of going for countryside walks and seeing plastic poo bags hanging in trees that people can't be bothered to throw away? So, you know, consider compostable ones, or maybe constructing a wormery in your garden using dog waste. And also the staycations and pet-friendly holidays, which with international travel restricted are going to be, we assume, more prioritised this year. But the main one is to consider swapping food. And if you're sort of maybe a little bit sceptical, maybe try one day a week swapping your dog's food for a plant-based diet, or maybe go for it gradually and make 7 days a week plant-based. It's healthy. The formulated diets, for example, Hound's Superfood New Diet, hypoallergenic, they're low in fat. We have a huge obesity problem with pets in the UK as well. So it ticks so many boxes. And also, in a growing plant-based human population, I think a lot of people are finding it harder and harder to justify feeding a dead animal to their pet animal, especially as we're all kind of animal lovers. So this provides a really good alternative, a healthy option that we could all give it a go and see if our dogs like and obviously do well on it. And to be honest with you, I mean, I live in Brighton. We have quite an alternative population down here, and I've seen probably a higher proportion of plant-based dogs in my veterinary career, and they all thrive. And also I've done lots of international work in places like India and Thailand, where they're often just fed plant-based diets and they do marvelously. So really there's no reason why people shouldn't try it and give it a go.
Andrew, Mark raised a very important point there in terms of pet obesity, which is a growing problem, no pun intended, but in terms of that, is this one way in which we can start addressing that? Because usually you find if you're on a more plant-based diet, etc., maybe actually you're less likely to sort of be padding out or again, share with us what's the kind of line on this one?
I mean, you're absolutely right. I was a dog and cat veterinarian for 8 years until about 8 years ago when I became an academic. But we were seeing in practice dogs and cats coming in increasingly overweight and obese and suffering shortened lifespans, mobility problems, discomfort when they're walking, increased anaesthetic risk, and so on. Look, I've just finished the first really large-scale study of the health of dogs on different diets. It's research that I've been doing in this last year. We looked at 2,500 dogs on different diets, and we found that the ones on the vegan diets were generally just as healthy and indeed healthier in some respects than the meat-based dogs. And one of the several benefits was they had lower rates of obesity and the related problems such as lameness and so on. This can potentially affect longevity, how long the animals actually live for as well. So yes, the evidence from the large-scale population study that I've done, and there's another research group in North America also putting out a very similar one very shortly, who I understand have similar results. The evidence shows that they're less likely to suffer from being overweight and obese than dogs on sort of the more old-fashioned meat-based diets, which are particularly high in calories.
And presumably also shifting to staycations means that there's less likelihood of stress because of dogs being separated from their owners and put into some holiday camp that they probably don't like in the first place.
Absolutely. I mean, sorry, Mike, please.
I was going to say absolutely, because, and especially after this sort of pandemic last year, because the separation anxiety potential of animals, dogs and cats, but obviously in this instance, we're talking dogs, to be with their owners 24/7 and then all of a sudden to be separated either in a kennels or when owners indeed go back to work. This is a real welfare issue that we're looking at very carefully. And if anyone suspects that their pet may be prone to this, then please seek out a qualified behaviourist to start making changes to prepare that animal for what happens next, because the last thing we need is a spike in abandonment of separation anxiety cases into rescue, which are traditionally hard not only to rehome but also to rehabilitate as well.
Yeah, very, very much so. Mark, do you by chance know what HOUND stands for? Is it just HOUND? Because it's not obviously HOUND, the actual HOUND thing. I was thinking, is there an acronym there? It's like heaven on wheels for something or some sort of system there. Or is it just a case of just go for HOUND?
It's a lovely thought, but as far as I'm aware, it's just a different, an alternative way of saying hound. So the website is dogslovehound.com with a W. So that's dogslovehound.com. And all the information of the diet and the ingredients and all the great stuff that it brings to our lives and our dogs' lives is on there for you to enjoy and to share with others. So, yeah, it's a really exciting time for dog food right now.
Which I suppose some might say we've waited for that for quite some time, really, which is excellent. For the moment, Professor Andrew Knight, veterinary professor of animal welfare, and of course the awesomely talented, as we said, Mark Abraham. He knows everything in terms of TV vet stuff, etc. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and stay happy.
Thanks,
Alex. Thank you very much.
Cheers.